the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast is just two guys and maybe a guest or two discussing Bitcoin, Bitcoin equities, and the related macroeconomic space. It's not meant to be financial advice, so please, if you're doing any investing after listening to our program, do your own research, do your own due diligence, and understand that any money you invest can be lost. The show is meant for entertainment purposes only, and we hope you enjoy the program. Friends and enemies, welcome to a special Wednesday edition. These aren't really that special anymore. We do them every week, and if it was up to you, we'd do it every day. So anyway, it's a Wednesday edition of the show, Canadian Bitcoiners Podcast, brought to you as always by ShakePay, best place to buy and sell, never sell your Bitcoin in Canada. Right now, and I think for like the foreseeable future, I always say right now, but I'm pretty sure it's going to go on for a long time. If you use our promo code to sign up, they'll just give you $30 on your first $100 buy. You can't go wrong. You can pull that out and pay for gas if you're still driving a car, still working. And if gas
that's only what, like 3 liters?
$2 a liter. Yeah, you might be able to get back home if you fill your car with that $30, which is nice. You won't have to leave your car at the gas station. That's always a plus. Shake your phone every day. They funnel you a little bit of a Satoshi allowance there, which you can take off and put to cold storage as much as you want and as often as you want and all that good stuff. Up to 1,000 sats a day after 200 days. Pretty good. Pretty good. And of course, the cashback, I should say sats back Visa card. So you use your CAD balance on ShakePay, spend some money on, you know, assorted sort of low time preference or high time preference fiat goods and get a couple of Satoshis back so you don't feel too bad about it and you can sleep at night, hopefully more soundly. Len, it's good to see you. How are you doing today?
I'm wonderful, Joey, especially after that news we got about Russia. How could I not be?
Hey. Red Scare, buddy. We're back. In the green room, we have Pierre Corbin, whose last name I'm probably not pronouncing properly, but
Corbin.
What's going on? Yeah. Good to see you. He's the creative mind behind the hit film. I want to say, hey, you got 6-figure views on YouTube, so that makes it a hit in my eyes. The Great Reset and the Rise of Bitcoin. So, Pierre, first of all, thank you for coming on the show. Second of all, how you doing?
Good. Thanks for having me here. A bit early for me, you know, I'm traveling a lot right now. I'm in Sri Lanka, so I had to get up in the middle of the night.
Colombo?
Yeah. But another town, Ella, right in the middle of the island. And it's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me, guys.
Are you going to Jaffna at all?
Sorry?
Are you going to Jaffna at all?
No, no time. We're only doing the south of the island because we're only here for 2 weeks.
All right.
Love it. Yeah. Okay, so Pierre, you got to tell us, first of all, we'll get into the movie, of course, because that's, you know, really the topic du jour. But, you know, you are a new face to me, new personality to me. Mm-hmm. So I want to know, how did you get into Bitcoin? What's the orange pill story?
So the first coin I ever bought actually was Ethereum, you know, not Bitcoin.
Get off the show now.
Did we vet this guy? You have one job to vet the guest and you didn't even vet him. He's talking about Ethereum. It's been 30 seconds.
You know, I think every Bitcoiner goes through some mistakes. and basically, so I started in 2017, and I was part of this ICO craze that was awesome for a long time and then very bad. And I kind of even dropped it after a while because, you know, bear market, you're losing money, just focus on work. I was a consultant in the tech. And then I saw that this new cycle was going to start, I got back into Bitcoin some more. And this is when I really started being orange pilled, let's say. And started digging deep. And before, so I quit my job in May because I managed to make enough money. You know, I was a bit tired of not seeing any progress in the direction of crypto and Bitcoin at my job. So I just decided that I'm kind of wasting time if they're not going there at all. So I just decided to quit and go full-time Bitcoin. And so it started with just a few months of trying to figure out what it is I want to do, you know, because it's hard to just go full-time Bitcoin, I guess. One idea to the other. I had a lot of free time, you know, it was summer holiday, summer last year in Europe. And I watched a documentary that I guess you know, inside job. And I don't know, just that day I went running the next day, and I thought, okay, maybe I could try and do something, because I always like making, you know, videos and films. And yeah, and I just started getting to work.
So this is what compelled you to actually make this, the documentary, The Great Reset and the Rise of Bitcoin, because this has gotten a lot of traction online. And from what I understand, it's potentially might even get screened at the Bitcoin conference in Miami. At least there's a movement to get it done.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah. So, I mean, tell us, like, you know, what really compelled you to do it? Like, how did you learn about this? I mean, there's a lot to do to create a documentary of this nature here, because it's, you know, it's rather long, and there's a lot of information that you included in it. And as Joey said, the production value is pretty good. So
it's tight. It is tight. Yeah, looks good.
Yeah. So give us a little bit more about the background of it. Like, you know, I just want to hear more about it.
So it started really based on an article written by Dylan Leclerc that you may have read. I don't remember the title exactly. But basically, it covers the long-term and short-term debt cycles that were presented by Ray Dalio in his video, How the Economic Machine Works. And Dylan Leclerc simply added how Bitcoin could fit in this context. And I found this idea very interesting. And also, I found the fact that there is there's very little information out there, honest information as to what is happening in the economy. So I took a look at, you know, what Ray Dalio did, what Dylan Leclerc did about it. And I just thought, okay, maybe what could be interesting would be to write an article that covers this, but looks at actual numbers, where we are today, kind of. Because Ray Dalio's video is from 10 years ago. Dylan Leclerc's article didn't cover much of the actual data. So I just started doing a lot of research. And, you know, as prior consultant, you're good at research. So I did a lot of research. I downloaded a lot of data, aggregated it. I was also specialized a lot in data visualization, data analytics. So I just thought I'd put all of this together, and I started writing, you know, and little by little, I started thinking, okay, maybe I can just take it a step further, you know, and adding other topics that I thought were important topics to have in such a film. So then, you know, I thought, okay, might as well just go all in on this and put as much information as I can about it, and also get in touch with some of my friends that are, well, either music composers, professional editors, and so on, to really step up the game and make the best film we can.
I just have one comment, Joey, to make. I watched a video with my wife. It was our date night, and we watched this documentary together. So
it's romantic. Truly,
there's a romantic notion that behind it. With Valentine's Day coming up, everybody, ladies and gentlemen, watch this documentary on Valentine's Day.
Buddy, you're going to be alone on the next Valentine's Day if you pull this out. Listen, babe, this year we're going to be watching something. We're going to be talking about the collapse of modern society, okay? It's going to be so great. Get the heart-shaped chocolates. You're going
to
love it.
But it's a true story. I did watch it with her on our date night, so I'll just pass it over to you, Joey. Just wanted to make that comment.
Okay, Pierre, ignore this foolish commentary from the other panel.
I think any reason is good to watch it.
Listen, 120,000 people have found a reason to watch it. So, you know, to your credit, I think in Bitcoin, a lot of the times, especially during bear markets, there's this urge from people who don't have the chops. And, I sometimes would include myself in this too. Like Len and I make a show every week. It's sometimes just slow news weeks. And so we still try to make the content. But sometimes there's this urge from people who don't have the chops to put together, aggregate, to use your word, information that they think is valuable to the space. But the problem is that I think they start aggregating, and then what they do is they tie a sloppy knot on it at the end to make this original idea fit the data that they pulled. And this is, I think, a common problem, not just in, you know, articles or films, but also I think in academic papers and other, you know, other realms where this kind of stuff is prevalent. But to your credit, you know, watching the movie, one of the things I was, you know, sort of impressed by was that you managed to work in, you know, not just basically all my favorite memes from the last year or two, but also the data that makes this stuff stick. And there's a couple of good clips from Dalio videos and good clips from, there's a couple of good Kashkari segments and stuff about the environment and energy use. And, this is, I think, to me, Pierre, something that you could show to somebody who didn't know anything about Bitcoin. Now, was that your intention, or did that kind of just happen organically?
No, it was my intention. You know, the idea was, if I believe in it so much, and I think that everyone around me should pay attention, then I need to try and make it so that the people around me can understand it. And, you know, my family, my friends, we all have different backgrounds. We've all done different stuff professionally. I studied finance, you know, then I studied tech. I'm also a developer. So it's, you know, it's easier for me to get, but it's not necessary for everyone. Some people, first off, don't care. Yeah. So they'll never try and do the research themselves. So the idea was kind of to try and put this together in a simple way so that, well, I do the research for everyone. Yeah. And then try and open it up as much as possible, not only to my sphere, but, you know, beyond.
So, question for you in that vein: what feedback did you get during the editing process for the video? What would the what would the review panel say was the weak points of that video? Because, like I said, I think it was pretty good start to finish and pretty concise, more importantly. Mm-hmm. So, what feedback did you get along the way that you made changes on?
So that was a bit tricky as well, because, you know, the people that were working with me, they just know nothing about the topic. I mean, the main editor, the first time that I watched the film with him, because so the whole process was that I did all the research, found all the clips, I did all the graphics and so on, and I did the first editing of the film. And then I passed this on to a friend of mine, professional editor, and he just made it look good, right? And so he worked already with the entire film done. And what he told me the first time he watched was that it's great. It looks like a proper documentary, not just some YouTube video. But I hardly understand any of it. So, you know, it's easy to stay locked in your own biases if you're the only person that mm-hmm. knows what you're talking about when you're working on something. Oh, yeah. But at the same time, you know, what I was trying to do is, the film is obviously opinionated, right? It goes in favor. I mean, from the start, right? It goes in favor of Bitcoin. But I just couldn't do anything different, I think, when it comes to that. But at the same time, I stay true to Bitcoiner concepts, right? So keeping this in mind that I didn't necessarily come up with anything myself, maybe just one point towards the end of the film, I was confident that it all makes sense, you know? So not so much feedback that was helpful in the production of the film directly, apart from the filmmaking technical aspects, but I was confident with the content because I knew it was Bitcoiner content.
As you did this film and you released it, and it's shining a light, a negative light, on the European Central Bank and the Federal Reserve and the likes, you must have been making some enemies by doing this. Have you been contacted by anybody? I'm just curious. And if so, could you give some names who may have contacted you? Because I'm sure people may not like the fact that this has been released. And it's not like you're fabricating anything. It's all truthful. You're just basically rehashing information that's out there. So, but I still think along the way, you're probably going to make some enemies. I'm just curious if anybody's tapped you on the shoulder and say, let's try to remove this thing, or let's see what we could do to maybe adjust the narrative. Or did anybody contact you?
Well, no, which I kind of hope this day will come. That would be very exciting. No, I don't know. There's multiple people that mentioned this too, even in the comment section, saying everyone download this film because it will be a deep platform very soon. So which is great also, to see people that find this film so important that they would recommend anyone to download it and have a hard copy of it on their computers. But as of now, no. Maybe if traction grows, it might. I did try, tagging the Fed and the ECB on some of my tweets when I'm just calling off, what they're doing. But of course, I think they likely have a no-show filter on Twitter if it mentions Bitcoin.
I don't think Christine is answering your tweets there, Pierre. I doubt very much she's going to be like hitting you back with the 100 emoji anytime soon. Okay, so let's talk about the content of the film. There's I think a lot of Bitcoiners would agree on the nature of, we'll say, the fiat system, the cash system, and the holes in the way that works. You highlight, you know, in particular, the 1971 Nixon speech where gold redemption was revoked as a possibility for citizens. There's some really good content in that part that I hadn't heard before, these sorts of tape recordings of phone calls. So what, first of all, I want to know where you got that stuff, and why do you think it's important that people see this? Because like you mentioned, and I think you're right, that this is a good movie for a first-time Bitcoiner. Why is this an important thing, in your view, for people to see and understand?
So this part in particular was, after going through all the technicals, so the first part of the film is, you know, our financial system, what is the data reading, right? Then move on to, okay, so we know we're in trouble. So what are these central banks going to do now, right? And then I introduce Bitcoin and simply go into even the technicalities of how it works, just to make it clear for people. And then there's the part where I try to wrap it up. The part that you mentioned in particular was there because, you know, Bitcoin is often compared to gold. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was important to actually do this comparison and have a section that explains how Bitcoin is a better form of money, including better than gold. For this, some historical context had to be given. And I think the best one is when Nixon in 1971 pretty much screwed the entire world and started a super inflationary period in our history, only by controlling really the exchange of gold in the US and internationally. There was a lot of facts that I didn't know myself before. You know, all these recordings, I thought they were, this was taken from a documentary that already existed. And I found all of this on, I tried to stick to finding all of the clips on YouTube. And in fact, on the website of the film, thegreatresetfilm.com, there's a section where there's all of the sources, and you can even find each of the video sources. So if ever you're interested in some more, you can also find the name of the entire documentary where these extracts were taken from. And so I thought, okay, I can use some of this information there. I can also just take the full speech of Nixon to also show the comparison, right? And I think it speaks a lot to what's happening today. You know, there's Nixon saying that, we decided to do this. We decided to do it in cooperation with, you know.
It's so bullshit.
It's crazy, right? And so I thought that would be very interesting to have the first part where he explains it, then the detailed explanation of what was happening behind, including all of these mic recordings that there were of Nixon talking to, you know, different people in his staff, and then go back again to Nixon just adding even more to what bullshit he was just saying in front of all of, you know, the world, in fact, and how they decided together to build a new monetary system, you know. So I think that was very important, because you even see it, I think today Erdogan from Turkey announced that they're gonna come up with basically do exactly this, so not allow their citizens to own some gold and force them to sell their gold to the government. Right?
You didn't see that, Len. You didn't see that? Turkey, yeah. I think starting this weekend, APR, they're incentivizing, coming up with a program to incentivize citizens to sell their gold back to the government for Turkish
lira.
History
repeating itself.
It's almost unbelievable.
Wow. Yeah. So that's why, you know, it's perfect. But going back into archives that even in, you know, the 70s, this is what they were doing. I could go even, you know, before that, right? Because it's just, as you said, history repeating itself in 1971 wasn't the first time either, right? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, you know, I thought interesting to give this context, because no one realizes that. And if you talk about what Nixon did, well, you know, the famous what happened in 1971, well, no one gets that, right? It's so completely out of touch for normies.
I got a question to do with your perspective on Bitcoin, because yours might be slightly different than Joy and myself, because we're mm-hmm. not in it to the same degree you are. You're living it. You've gotten out of the fiat mining gig, and now you're totally in Bitcoin. And Joey and I are still, unfortunately, doing our fiat mining stuff. Very sad. Yeah. But in terms of Bitcoin, can you picture anything coming out, any sort of news or event that might negatively impacted in the next little while? Could it be potentially a country banning it or an attack on miners? Like, what do you perceive to be one of the biggest hurdles that could potentially derail Bitcoin in the next little while?
So I try to put this a fair bit of thought into this, and for now it's I think it's difficult to see, because a country banning it, sure, if it was big scale, let's say the euro's central bank decides to do this and all the eurozone simply cannot touch it, the thing is that it represents so much opportunity for others. And if you get into all these game theory ideas, also such a negative impact for the ECB that I'm not even sure they'd go for it, right? Mm-hmm. So banning it, it's kind of the saying that everything is good for Bitcoin, yeah. Because down the road, that's what happens eventually. So I don't know. It's hard to say, because it's been 13 years since Bitcoin was created. Governments since year one have been trying to shut it down, and yet they have never managed to do it. So if I know me as full-time Bitcoiner and have the flexibility of just being wherever I want, if a government decides to ban it and I'm not welcome there anymore, even if it's my home country, too bad, I can just go elsewhere. And that's okay. I mean, I live most of my life outside of my home country, so for me, that's not a problem, right? But I don't see right now what could actually stop it. There's only good news, and what would be able to kill it, it's hard to say, because I feel like we've already had, and they keep on repeating, just the same FUD topics, right? Mm-hmm. So unless something new comes, that's unexpected, hard to say. But then that would pretty much be a black swan event.
Habitez-vous en France?
No. So I lived 7 years of my life in France. And then I moved to Poland. So I lived most of my life there, and I lived in other places as well. Yeah.
Gotcha.
Interesting. Yeah. And you just dropped the language there again. There.
That was good. Yeah.
Every guest. He probably just looked at. Don't pat him on the back.
No. Just definitely. Just pat him.
For sure. 100%. Yeah. Good. Yeah, that's cereal box French. Anyway, okay, so Pierre, again, sorry about my colleague here. There's one thing, one big element of the film that I think you probably get, if you were introducing this to a normie, you would get pushback on two things. One would be the Bitcoin thing in its entirety. I don't think anyone would give you a hard time about the breakdown in 71 and the long-term debt cycles. These are pretty widely accepted ideas, especially the last 2 years. A lot of this stuff has come into the lexicon in a way that 2 years before that, no one knew about or talked about. But you do have a pretty big focus on the Great Reset. It's in the title of the film. Mm-hmm. And, I'm thinking about my own circles. I have a pretty easy time, hot knife through butter kind of stuff, talking about how fiat money is broken. But when you start talking about the Great Reset, you meet, well, that's a conspiracy theory, or that's something that, is, you heard that on Joe Rogan or whatever. What? In your view, okay, and I don't want you to spoil the movie, everyone should go watch it, but what is the Great Reset, and why should it be important to people, whether they own Bitcoin or not?
So in the film, I try and really focus only on the financial part of it, because I think this is the first layer that concerns everyone. But basically, the Great Reset is a World Economic Forum initiative. That's how they call it. This is basically what inspired the film, and it's based on a book that was written by Charles Schwab, right? Mm-hmm. Or Klaus Schwab, the founder the founder of the World Economic Forum, which you can quickly go into the conspiracy theory world, right? But if you research it enough, it's hard not to get there, kind of, because there's just a, it's his agenda, it's his idea of what this Great Reset be, and it's an idea of what could happen post COVID, and if you think of the Great Reset in itself, there's a lot of things in it. I try to focus only on the financial part, because it is clear that we've reached a point in our debt cycles that we're just completely overblown, and valuations are completely out of touch with what value is and what money actually means, right? We have close to 4 times now. In my film, I mentioned 3.5 times, but now it's closer to 4 times global debt than global compared to global GDP, right? So there's a moment where all of this has to reset eventually, right? Now, in the words of, you know, the IMF, the European Central Bank, any central bank, and the World Economic Forum, this great reset has to come with, I mean, has to come, that's what they think, with a change in our monetary system. And a part of this is because they are themselves losing touch with it. So if they're capable of resetting this through the creation of CBDCs, then we can let go of our previous currencies, like the US dollar, the way it looks now, and transition to this digital currency that allows them for more control and, you know, all the negative effects of CBDCs, and allow to blow off even more through money printing the debt from the previous system, because the more there is inflation, the more there's a monetary supply available, then the less this debt will be worth compared to this new financial system that is based off new currencies. And so that's the thesis that I try and follow along the film, basically. The conclusion of that is that the only thing, and this is very close to what Greg Foss always says, is that the only thing that can happen is just print. There's no other option, and their agenda goes in that direction too. So this is why we need to protect ourselves.
Yeah. It's never ending when they go down that path. And you mentioned a few of the no coiners. You mentioned the IMF, the WEF. So there's
isn't the best. It still amazes me every time I see that Neil Kashkari clip where the guy's eyes are like so wide they're touching his fucking ears. He's like, oh yeah, no, there's no end. There's no end. Like
there is.
Oh
my God, but
get
you
this
touched
guy off the TV.
You touched upon one thing. You mentioned CBDCs, and given what you've learned through the whole process of making this documentary, and even before that, I'd love to know your opinion on that, because Joy and I, we've voiced our opinions on the CBDC. We feel that it's going to potentially come with surveillance and lack of freedom where you want to spend your own money. So I'm wondering what your thoughts on our CBDCs, and if you could just elaborate a little bit more about it.
So I think, yeah, I think the same you guys think. It's just, it's an illusion, I think. And they're going to sell it based on all of these illusions that, you know, we're in the digital age, we need some digital money, right? I think that's how they're going to try and, you know, sell it to people, particularly millennials that love all this stuff, right? And never are they going to explain, maybe that's not true, because I forgot what his name is, the second person, basically, after Christine Lagarde from the ECB, an Italian guy, he said out loud, publicly, that they will put expiry dates on the new CBDCs mm-hmm. that they will create in the European Union, right? But somehow this is the kind of info that will not trickle down to the people that will want to adopt it and will have to adopt it, right? This won't touch them. But, I mean, talk about control right there, right? Either you spend your money, either it's gone. Like that's not money anymore. That's coupons, like the same thing you can get for supermarkets or something, right?
So how do you convince the normie that this is a problem then? Because I think we agree on this. This is obviously a problem, but the number of people that hold Bitcoin, first of all, we're not that many in number. And second of all, we don't have to be convinced. You know, this is a show where oftentimes I find we're preaching to the converted. So what do you say to like your sister, your aunt, your uncle, like, hey, maybe think about this stuff. We got to do something about this before it's too late.
Yeah. So this is one of the reasons why I try to make the film approachable, so that, and a lot of people are commenting always, they're writing to me on Twitter and so on, just to say, this is my new go-to orange pill material, right? So that was the objective, basically. But it's a tricky conversation to have, in fact, because you either have 4 hours with that person to like have a deep conversation and explain all of this. Either you don't have this amount of time and a lot of your points will be dismissed. What I try and usually focus on is, first off, just the topic of inflation, because this everyone doesn't necessarily understand, but realizes the impact that it has, and it's easy to make them understand it, right? And then explain what they're saying when they talk about these CBDCs, right? Just exactly this expiry date, you know, because no one hears about it directly because, you know, the media won't talk about it when they mention CBDCs. So just making them aware of this. And if you just use these two points very quickly, it's often, okay, so yeah, we're fucked. Like, what now? You know? Well, you know, there's this thing, orange logo. Yeah.
Along the way, so how many people did you orange pill? You must have orange pilled a bunch of people.
Gotta be a bunch of people.
And I would imagine, you know, you're talking about the people that helped edit your video. And there must have been a number of people that you've introduced to your video, and they must have looked at Bitcoin in a different light, at least, or maybe exposed to it for the very first time. And through the creation of your video, you must have orange pilled a crap load of people. Do you have a number that you could provide us?
No, yeah, I can't give you a number. I'm not that accurate. But yeah, a bunch. I mean, all the guys that worked on the film for me, I paid all of them in Bitcoin. I mean, that was the deal. I said, hey guys, like, do you want to make some Bitcoin? You know, we can work on this project together. And for me, you know, even if they're very close friends, they had to be paid for it. Especially, it was important for me for everyone to be paid in Bitcoin. And they just wanted Bitcoin. In fact, when, you know, once the film was done, it was released, only a week later, we actually had these conversations. And I said, okay, look, at first I told you that, you know, you'd be paid in Bitcoin. Is this okay for you still? You know, cause yeah, things can change, of course, right? If they prefer not to. And I'm like, no, yes, send me some Bitcoin. How do I do this? You know, I had to explain how they can get their Bitcoin address from their wallet, you know? So yeah, I think there's a lot of patience always needed, right? Because I've been in it since 2017, yeah, so it's 5 years, and the learning curve now is easier than it was even 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. I feel that having the patience to help people from A to Z when it comes to their first purchase, and you know, and doing it in a proper approach, kind of not telling them, yeah, go all in straight away. No, like, you know, just do one first small trade, you know, buy a small amount, and a week later, kind of, you know, observe, get the experience, what it's like. And a week later, if ever, you know, you can either talk to me about it and we can see if it's a good moment. Although, you know, so many people always ask me, Pierre, is it a good moment to buy Bitcoin? I say, well, look, like me, I live completely off of Bitcoin. Yeah? I have zero fiat. I mean, I think I'm at 99% Bitcoin. So I only have fiat for my day-to-day expenses, right? So it's hard for me to give a non-biased answer to that question, because I just bought Bitcoin whenever I had the chance. Yeah. So it's kind of, and if I had more cash now, I'd be buying more, right? So yeah, they ask me, I say, well, you know, me, I just always buy.
That's a good answer. I mean, that's what we do too. There's never a bad time to buy Bitcoin. That's what, when people ask me, is it a good time? I just say the time is never wrong. It's always, you know, right.
Exactly.
The best time, what is they yesterday, say? It's the like second the best whole, time is today.
Yeah, the planting trees thing, right? These old proverbs. I just change the words so they make sense for Bitcoin. Yeah, that's the way to go. Mm-hmm. Okay, so Pierre, the movie, you know, I look at the film and I think this is a film that was probably difficult to make because, you know, there's so many things happening in Bitcoin all the time. And, you know, we talked just today, for example, about Russia, you know, making their currency move toward legalizing and regulating. You know, Len just heard about this Turkey and gold thing. What were the struggles?
I gotta pull my gold out of my Turkish vault.
You better head to Turkey tomorrow. You better call your buddy Ergo there and tell him.
I'll be in Istanbul tomorrow morning.
Yeah, make sure you tap it. Make sure it sounds like gold. So the question is, what challenges did you have deciding when to make Final Cut? And, you know, I would imagine there was a lot of stuff, right? Because it's like a constant stream of new information about this asset. So what was that like for you?
Yeah, it was a bit tricky at some points because so I started working on the film in July, right? So I started just writing the article and editing at the same time, right? It was a kind of bilateral process. when there's a bull market, then this is when everything is happening, right? There's new news, new people getting in, new, like, you know, more people doing research about it, therefore sharing more information. It's only during a bull market that you're going to get, you know, clips of Scaramucci talking about Bitcoin. Kind of, right? So, yeah, there was often this feeling that there's more. I could go back to this extract and, like, add more info. And it's just eventually you have to, make choices and accept that there's some stuff you won't be able to cut in there. That's why it was just important to stay with the main concepts and stay with what is known today and likely won't change, right? So definitely, yeah, that's a good point, because there was many times where, you know, you're just there scratching your head and wondering, okay, is there time, is there space for me to add something about it? And multiple times I had the chance, or so, like, the first version of the film that I did was without me talking to the camera.
It was even just... listen, the only reason I stuck around for the whole movie is because of that couch. That couch looks great.
You were in Poland at that time, I believe, right?
I was in Poland. I was there since the month of June or July. I've been traveling everywhere, and just go back to Poland. Next week I'll be in Poland, for example, for 2 weeks before moving on to the next place. And that was in October, and I was in Poland, and it was just a very particular Airbnb, had a very special style, and and it had this couch. Yeah, I had the couch, and so, you know, the entire room was nicely lit. So the idea came, well, maybe to give a more natural flow to the film, we can just get a friend to come here and just record a more interview format where I just talked about everything that was in the film, and then that's one of these chances, opportunities I got to go back and add some stuff, because I had to basically edit all of these clips and add them to what was already there in the film, right? Mm-hmm. So the kind of, I mean, a lot of work, like, really, this is the kind of stuff that, you know, forces you to just go back to every and just rewatch every minute of your film, rewatch every minute of this interview format and see where it can fit. And it also opens up the opportunity to add new content. So started in July, but October gave me a chance to have this mid-production content review and addition of new content.
You've immortalized that couch.
It's a great couch, man. Yeah. I like it. That's the first thing I know is, wow, this would be a nice couch to have.
Airbnb has to give you some sort of reward as a result of this, because you're giving them a lot of free press as a result of that. But as for your video itself, isn't it up for some sort of award or something? I believe it's up against a number of different films, and it made the semifinals of some sort of tournament. I don't know how to describe it, but
tournament, a movie tournament, Len. Come on, something like that. It's an award show. It's not a tournament. Would you call the Emmy Awards a tournament?
It's up against other ones. I'm not sure if it gets voted on or something. Like, yeah, could let us know a little bit more about this.
Yeah. So my thought was that I put a lot of work in making a film. I try and make it as good as possible. And I don't know if I'm a, let's say, multi-skilled person. Yeah. So, like, I'm a developer. I speak, like, 5 languages. I'm good with data. I can make films. Like, you know, so yeah. No. To my level, right? To my level, of course, because I can't get it to a 100% finished thing myself. I could
operate a mouse. Just letting you know. I'm good at using a mouse.
Thing. This is the one thing needed for all of these skills I just mentioned. So, you know, you've got the
rudimentary skill. Yeah. On the way to greatness.
But what I mean is just that I don't know when is the next time I'll make a film. You know, maybe never. Right? Like, although seeing how this one is received and people wanting more and so on. I mean, the channel already got over 2,500 subscribers, which I was hoping for a lot of views. I wasn't necessarily expecting so many subscribers, and you know, this may require some more content to be posted. But the thing is, since I don't know whether at all I'm going to make another film, the idea was to just go all in, and including applying to multiple film festivals. And so far it's been selected to two. It's been selected to one in Barcelona and one in New York called Oneiros. And so this one, this last one, it won actually two awards in two different categories as best documentary and best indie film. So awesome. Like, I'd say really excited. Now, it's a lower level festival in the sense that, you know, it's not Cannes, it's not Sundance, or like, but the other competitors, I'd say other films that were submitted are also of a, I think, high quality, high level. And I'm very happy to have won that. Actually, it's you know, it just confirms the quality of the film, not only from a financial and Bitcoin perspective that I've had before. This one actually confirms that even cinematographically, it's worth something. So it's very satisfying. Yeah, very happy. And with the one in Barcelona, I think at the end of the month we'll know about the next stage. For now, it's just official selection. We'll see if it manages just to, you know, get at least up there. I don't know. It's a bigger festival, so I don't know if you know the same outcome is possible. But again, like, just I want to try and push it as far as possible while I'm at it.
Joey, I'm not sure.
We have an award-winning filmmaker on the show here.
Oh, that's me too. Every week, but apparently it's really? Up against nice. Where in the World Is Elizabeth Warren? That's the film that is going up against it. It's hard to actually pinpoint exactly where she is with that jet of hers. So, good luck on having your film go up against that one.
Pierre, was your like? When I watched that, when I watched the film, I agree. Like I mentioned, it looks polished. I even messaged Jen again this morning. I'm like, man, like rewatching this is tight. It's like well done. And I'm curious if you have any. This is like a creative question. I'm not a creative guy, but I'm always curious mm-hmm. about this kind of stuff. What was your inspo like for that film? Where did you get the idea for like the sort of way the film flows through the graphics? There's like some more sort of parts that are emphasized through different techniques. What did you think about? What films did you think about when you were making yours?
So I think the number one inspiration was Inside Job. Simply based off the pace and how information is presented there. Other than that, I don't know. It was a lot of, you know, a mishmash of all other documentaries I may have seen in the past and just kind of going with the flow and as to what I think looks good. I have to say there wasn't necessarily particular styles taken from other documentaries other than just documentaries as a whole, you know, in the format of like how Netflix documentaries can look like, kind of. So it was mostly trying to stay to this kind of neat, a lot of just any kind of animation there is with a black screen, you know, to just make it focused only on the topic itself. And that's pretty much it. I don't know, trying to keep a certain pace that is, you know, fast enough, but not too fast, including some small parts where I would add, you know, just a sentence of text that appears, which allows to slow down, you know, between one topic to another. It slows down the viewer, allows him to process it and get introduced. So either get introduced to the next topic or really have a conclusion sentence for a particular topic before moving on, and just trying to pace this down as much as possible. I had some additional shots there, in fact, that were, you know, maybe 20 seconds portions where there's only music and images of, cities, just day-to-day life kind of. But the editor that worked on it afterwards, he said that it kind of disconnects you from the film. So these were all removed. So, you know, there was a lot of also communication with him and also with the other guy that did that did the music as to how we want to pace it at what point and how it should be. Yeah, very interesting work actually. It's the first time I did this, right? Like I did other videos before that, but never did I do a full feature film and never did I collaborate this way with another editor and a music producer to really set a vibe like that. And that this was very, very cool. That's definitely something that I'd be happy to work on again.
Yeah, no, I sense there's going to be a director's cut coming out in not too distant future.
So now I get the 3-hour version. I need more couch. I need more everything.
but let us know a little bit along the way, because in 2017 is where you first entered this space. And I know you mentioned you first bought you got Ethereum. You know, that was one of the first things you bought. Hopefully you sold it by now. But tell us some of the people that influenced you along the way. Name us some of the characters and the people that guided you on the right path to where you are today.
You know, a lot of it for me was just YouTubers that don't focus only on Bitcoin at start, right? There's like this guy, Datadash is the name of his channel, Nicholas Merton. Like I don't follow him anymore. I don't watch his content anymore. Well, because he's not just Bitcoiner, but he was one of the first to actually, particularly during the bear market, to talk about all of mostly Bitcoin and talk about the concepts of inflation, of how Bitcoin works with that. You know, so like it was just a YouTuber that I had started following in 2017 that I had kind of put aside for a while, and then you know some notifications here and there on YouTube. And just started watching this kind of stuff again, and he was talking about these more financial stuff, and this kind of got me back on track a bit more, because I have a master's degree in finance, so it's a topic that I find very interesting, and just giving the right words are what opened up to this. Then when it came to being fully orange pilled, I think it was originally the works of Plan B. And that really opened up my mind to what could happen with this. I mean, a lot of my financial decisions before, so around the halving time, the last halving, were based on his way of talking about things, writing about it, and his model that maybe didn't happen as was expected, but still allowed me to put myself in a position where I can quit my job and focus full-time Bitcoin.
Amazing. So, incredible stuff, man. Yeah. So I guess I don't want to let you go without asking about, and that we didn't know you were living all on Bitcoin, but we know now. Mm-hmm. And so you really, Pierre, are like a great example of, you know, you're now sort of the product of two extremes, right? You have the master's degree in finance from the fiat realm, fiat academia, fiat money, fiat economics. Mm-hmm. And now you're living fully on Bitcoin, you know, some years later after producing a Bitcoin film. I want to know, you know, and you can say whatever you like here. I don't care if you talk about price, talk about girlfriends who left you, didn't leave you over this. Doesn't matter. Everything's fair game. But I want to know along the way, what were your biggest sort of psychological hurdles to moving more toward this end? Because certainly somebody who spends, you know, some five-figure or six-figure sum on education, unless you're in Europe, then maybe you don't spend anything. But, you know, you spend the time and the energy, you sort of build your identity around this stuff. For you to really leave that behind and come all the way to the other side, there must have been some tough decisions and psychological moments for you. I want to hear about them. What help other people who are thinking about doing the same thing, including Len, who's been thinking about quitting his job for the last 3 years, but can't pull the trigger.
18 years I've been thinking that thing. 18.
So definitely, and also, you know, my degree in finance, this was in Australia, so very costly as well. But yeah, it was you know, like it's the kind of stuff. I was always, and I think that's what matters, is just be strong with your own decisions and what you want to really do, right? Because I was studying finance, after hours, I was working in a restaurant at the same time. So studying, working double shifts almost daily at a restaurant. And the free time that I had after that was just learning how to code. Yeah. And I got this passion for coding. And after graduating, I knew that what I had to do was get a job in development somehow, in tech, you know. So I kind of even dropped finance, you know. I was just focused on trying to be a dev as much as possible. But my in-between profile allowed me to work on, you know, business-related dev stuff. So not purely a developer. All projects I worked on, I was the sole developer, right? And it's also a bit difficult because so my dad had a great corporate career, right? This is what like a good life means in his eyes, right? And just to say that it makes it harder to even have conversations like that, you know? Like there's not really anyone you can turn to be like, okay, look, I'm thinking of quitting my job for this reason and that reason. Like I would want to focus more on this or that. And in the end, it's just up to you, right? You have to own it and go for it. Now, of course, it's easier in a scenario where, you know, I've managed to accumulate 8 years of my previous salary, kind of, right? Like, it makes this decision, and that's how I think, you know, in very long term, you know. And but I think very often it's a matter of sitting down, and this I did a lot, sitting down, open like Excel. I love Excel, and just, you know, plan, lay out what, you know, your plan could look like. What would it be like if you did this, if you did that, you know, do different scenarios, and then just go for it, own it. Yeah.
What's the feedback you're getting over there in Sri Lanka? Because I'm not sure how the Bitcoin scene is in that part of the world. I'm curious if you could give us some insight into how it's developing over there.
Yeah, from my knowledge, it's not developing at all. I mean, I haven't had any conversation with anyone that actually knew anything about it, or that knew that people can have a lifestyle like mine where you just travel, work on developing Bitcoin, even if it's completely for free. And you know about it. Yeah, like that's the conversations I had with people. It's just or there was one other guy that did know about this, but we didn't get deep into a conversation because, you know, it was kind of beach party kind of scenario. And he's like, oh yeah, yeah, but I don't believe so much in Bitcoin, you know. I think there's other crypto with more future. It's like, you know, you're not going to get deep into a conversation at that time, kind of, because you'd be like, wait. Let me list everything out for you. Yeah. So, So no, like I haven't seen much here. In other places of the world, I've seen some more, where I've traveled more recently. In Croatia, for example, there was a cash exchange, how do you call it? You know, like to exchange your euros to dollars and so on, a counter like this. Well, they were also buying and selling Bitcoin there, which was very surprising. Like a tiny counter, you know, like this was very surprising for me.
It's growing. I want to talk a little bit also, like very briefly, because we're kind of running out of time. The projects you're developing, you're coding. I want to hear a little bit more about this. I mean, and how it ties into Bitcoin.
So I'm trying to come up with something new now, but I don't know. I have to try and get the right conversations with the right people. I have an idea when it comes to, you know, so when I worked in corporate companies, I mostly worked in financial information systems and automating, you know, different accounting processes, like all this very boring stuff. But when one of the most difficult processes that is a headache for every corporation is a reconciliation process. So it's a, you know, something that shows that you have your a platform like SAP or Oracle, that where you manage your accounting, that this information aligns with your actual account, kind of. Yeah.
Right.
And what I would want to try and explore, and I've started working on it on like some, you know, hacked through version, is how could such a reconciliation process be improved to help adoption of bigger companies, because there won't be a problem in their accounting because they have access to the blockchain directly in order to handle this accounting and compare, you know, this is what we have in SAP, like all these rows of data of, you know, invoices and so on. And this is what we have in the blockchain and how it connects. Now, ideally, this would also be, you know, a way to gather addresses in, you know, of course, very encrypted way, but gather addresses of different companies, because they would have to keep them on this platform, and be able to have a secondary part that is open source to track any leaked or known government addresses, and anyone would be able to know, well, where this money went, you know, any kind of transaction, whether it's a known address or not, and allow anyone to audit governments. But you know, that's still in the works, and I've spent a lot of time on it already, but there's already some hurdles that I see that make it a bit complicated, and so maybe more to come on that. We'll see.
Quite an answer for a you know, cottage hobby coder, wouldn't you say? Like, that's pretty good.
That's pretty deep. Yeah. SAP so it's compatible with Bitcoin. Like, it's that's quite a feat if you could manage to do it.
We'll try. Like, for now it's not that complicated. What I think is a bit harder is just the fact that how would companies feel about really having their addresses like this on a database. And I mean, you know, if you think of how they work today, corporations, this is what they do anyway. Yeah. But you know, it's just ideas, stuff in the work, and hopefully I'll be able to push this further in the next few months.
I love that. Pierre, you've been a great guest. I didn't know you got up in the middle of the night for this because we didn't ask where you were.
It's so late over there.
I know.
Yeah.
I know.
We started at 3 a.m. here.
Dude, you crushed. For a guy who probably just rolled out of bed, your hair looks great. You know, there's no couch, but it's fine for now, I guess. We'll worry about that.
I tried and sleep in an upright position.
Tell people where they can find you, where they can find your movie, all that good stuff. The mic is all yours, my friend.
Yeah, so on Twitter, at Sierre Corbin, right, which is Pierre Corbin, but replace the first two letters. I try and share there a lot of the progress from the film and just in general Bitcoin news. The film can also be found straight away from my Twitter profile, and you can also either Google or go on YouTube and type The Great Reset and the Rise of Bitcoin, or head on to the website, thegreatresetfilm.com, which will give you direct access to the film, every chapter, all of the film in an article format if you prefer reading it, and all of the data sources and extract sources and so on.
Crushed. Yeah. And also Pierre and Len will recommend to you, anonymous listener, that it's a good way to spend your Valentine's Day. I would not make that recommendation, but the other two people here, they would. So
I definitely accepted it. I can assure you.
I'm with you, Len.
You guys are fucked. Pierre Corbin, thanks for coming on the show, buddy. Take care, everybody. Thanks for watching. We'll see you next time.
Thanks a lot, guys. Bye.
You killed it.